here. Time for Coastal Windage, the talk of the coast, with your host, Reuben Truthmaker.
You can't handle the truth.
And Libby Streetwise.
Get out!
The phones are lighting up, and you guys are live.
All right, Coastsiders, it's Friday, October 4th, 2019. Pass the hat and pay your taxes. It's time for some Coastal Windage.
Ching, ching.
That's right. Ching, ching. This is Reuben Truthmaker, as always, with Livy Streetwise.
Hello.
And Mr. Mojo Filters.
Mojo,
good morning, team.
Good morning.
And this is Coastal Windage, the talk of the coast, the Coastside's number one live call-in talk radio show. We're here every Friday morning from 9 to 10, as you know, because you're listening right now, live in your bathrobe, as we are here on Main Street. Actually, Mojo forgot the bathrobe this morning. Yeah, I know. Yikes. Too much information.
Avert your eyes.
Anyways, we're here live every Friday morning. Coastside issues, hot topics, and you. If you missed the show Friday mornings, you can download podcasts of our past shows from khmbradio.com. Go ahead and do it, because this is the Coastside's community voice. So let's hear from you, Coastsiders. One programming note. We are transitioning to a new equipment bundle. So if you're listening on the internet or you're listening on your car radio and you're about to drive out of the Coastside, go ahead and listen on the internet by going to tunein.com, click or tap the search field and enter KHMV as in Victor. All right, get that vector
right,
Victor.
Pull over before you start entering that information in.
Yeah.
Do not do that while we're driving.
Right,
yeah.
Right, okay, yeah.
Yeah. Sure.
Thank you for that public service announcement,
public
Libby.
Service.
Yes, we are safe, law-abiding radio personalities here. All right, call now, email now, listen now. Call in now, 560-9851. Hey. The first caller today, we have two. Let me pull these out right now. These are the good stuff here. Two complimentary all-day ride tickets to the Santa Cruz Boardwalk. Okay, these are two tickets all day, all the stuff. Two tickets to the first caller.
Nice. Did our other winner pick them up? Do you know?
I'm going to say yes.
Good.
Yes. Chalisa, yes. 560-9851. Or send us an email at coastalwindage@gmail.com. We are now getting enough emails that we can't read every single one, so we're cherry-picking the best. We're having the interns cherry-pick the best ones and pass them along to us. Good luck on that. Again, first caller, two tickets, Santa Cruz Boardwalk, 560-9851.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a nice weekend.
It is. You know,
good weather.
This week was kind of a bit of a vacation for my wife and I. It was Cunha Outdoor Education Week.
Yes.
Mojo, you as well?
10-4 on vacation.
Right?
Yeah. You both were empty nesters, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. Like wow, this is what mid-evening is like. This is what the hours of 6 to 9 p.m. are like. Whoa.
Yeah.
It's nice to have a few extra hours in the day.
Did you find yourself going like, oh, it's 3, I need to be doing something? You know, it's that regular schedule that you normally have, but all of a sudden you don't.
Yes, I was constant throughout the day, or I was going and, you know, okay, hey, you know, son, it's... Oh, yeah, that's right.
Right, right. Yeah, it was weird to have a whole day. That took me about 2 days to get used to that. And
yeah.
Like, I can get used to it.
Yeah, now I'm used to it, and they're back.
Yeah.
Okay, so one thing that we were talking about before the show about the outdoor education, this is kind of a rite of passage.
Mm-hmm.
When we were growing up, or at least where I was, it was called sixth grade camp,
mm-hmm.
and it happened in sixth grade, and you went away for a week.
Did you do it before school or during school?
During school.
Okay.
We didn't have that.
Did you did not have that?
We did not have that. No.
Yeah. Must be a California thing.
Interesting.
We did a weekend. A weekend. Actually, it might have been like a Thursday, Friday, but yeah, just two nights.
Wow, I wonder if it is a California thing, because it was kind of like the Cunha kids. It was known that this happened in sixth grade, and as you got closer to that, you know, hey, next year we're going to camp, and then sixth grade camp. Well, when I was a kid, we were discussing this, so I'm going to have to ask my mom. It seemed like it was just part of the curriculum.
Mm.
But now it costs extra money to go. I think it costs around $500.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so you've got a situation where there are some kids that are not going on this traditional California, let's just call it California rite of passage, sixth grade camp, because it now costs $500. And so That's a concern to me of, I just have good memories of it, and it seems like it should be a collective experience.
Everyone should get to go.
Yeah, and if some kids are not able to go for financial reasons, then something needs to be done about that. Now, I have some friends, very generous friends, who recognized this issue and wanted to donate specifically to Cabrillo Unified School District for this program.
Terrific.
They wanted to either sponsor some individual kids or start some kind of fund.
Yeah.
For kids who
like
were
an endowment.
Yeah, not able to go. They were basically nonplussed by the district because the district would not guarantee that the money that they donated would be used specifically for those purposes.
Way to go, district. Yay.
Now, this is secondhand, and I'm sure, you know, if there's somebody from the district that wants to call and straighten us out on that, please do. 560-9851.
Good God, that just really upsets me.
It is very upsetting, especially when you look at the kind of this socioeconomic angle of this, of who's going to be going for $500 and who's not. Now, we're going to be talking later.
How do you decide who is, let's say somebody comes along with the money.
Yeah.
If they have $500, you know they're going to go. Now, somebody else comes along, so they're going to have to pick and choose. How are they going to do that?
Well, I mean, that's for the school district, I'm sure, has several different formulas. You know, how do you choose who gets the reduced school lunch and these types of things? That's a separate set of criteria that we'd need to look at. But there's not even a way to get to that point right now because there's no way to donate to the Outdoor Education Fund.
You can, but like you said, they can't guarantee where it's going to go.
Right.
And I have to say, I see their point. It's kind of like, who is going to go with your money?
At the end of the day, all of them should be going. From what I heard, and my son doesn't go to the school you guys go to, but you could choose to go or not. Money aside, let's say...
Yeah, it's optional.
I don't get that part of it. I don't think that it should be an option, to be honest. I think everyone should go. I think, you know, all for one... And I think because then you do get into the murky area of who's going to go. Then you do talk about the money.
Mm-hmm.
Then who's going to? But if everyone is going to be going, then let's figure that out. I mean, I went to a high school, and this was 12th grade, and our 12th grade trip was to Disneyland, right? And so the way that the president of our class designed the trip was figuring out how much it would cost per person. And for those who couldn't afford it, we had a fruit selling opportunity. So you could sell oranges and grapefruits. And if you sold this much, then you will have paid for the whole trip. And that allowed almost the entire class to go. There were a couple that weren't able to for family reasons.
Mm.
But you gave them the option to be able to do it. And because of that, it really enabled everyone, despite their economic circumstances, you know, their financial circumstances, mm-hmm. they got to go.
Yeah, I think that we have to look at it. Anybody who wants to go, I'm with you, Livia. To me, I feel like everybody should go. But in this day and age, especially in the Bay Area, you're never going to be able to compel everybody to do something. There's always going to be somebody that doesn't want their kid to go for this reason, or some kid that doesn't want to go and their parents go along with that. I don't understand it myself. I agree that, like, this is a collective experience. Part of what they are teaching here is being away from your parents, being out of your comfort zone, the collective energy of being with the other kids, sharing this experience, and coming back from this shared experience bonded and feeling some confidence. And so to be able to opt out of this and then basically sit in a classroom all week and do nothing, no homework, nothing, it doesn't make sense to me. I think we could all agree, hopefully in this room, that anybody who wants to go, the district should find a way to be able to get that person to go. Now, what you have is in families that are socioeconomically disadvantaged, the kid might feel like, I'm not even going to mention this because I know we can't afford it, or some feelings of inadequacy about the finances, and so they may not ask if there's an option that they can be helped out to go. I think it's up to the district, and I really wish the district would think about making some some fund or something available
right.
that people could donate to so that every kid who wants to go, every family who wants to send their kid to outdoor education can. It just seems like a rite of passage, at least in California, that's great for the kids. Okay, let's get on to our topics for the day,
yeah.
for the week. News yeah. and notes, as always, there's a whole list of things that we've cavalcade of topics for us to go through. Then we are already talking about the district, just the cratering of Cabrillo Unified School District with regard to finances. It is unbelievably not good. I'm just stunned as a parent in mm-hmm. the district now. I'm stunned. And why public shaming?
Hmm.
Let's do this.
Mm.
All right, coming up next week, you're not.
I have to tell you,
you're not going for public shaming.
These hot topics are. I'm already a little on the sleepy side this morning, and these are just getting me hot under the collar.
Okay, excellent. Well, Coastsiders, hopefully you're equally inflamed. 560-9851. Get on that phone and call us. Public shaming. That sounds like it's
Yikes.
All about, you know, let's get some calls on that. Okay, coming up next week, I really want people to listen in next week at 9 a.m. on Friday. We're going to have a Shooting the Breeze live interview segment with Jill Jacobson, Executive Director of the Boys and Girls Club of the Coastside. Again, we're going to talk about Boys and Girls Club of the Coastside programs. We're going to talk about Jill's career and what brought her here. And then we're going to get to the meat of the topic, which is what's going to be the nickname for the gym.
Oh,
Jill's on board with
this. That is your baby.
She said that she had an event at the gym a couple weeks ago, some kind of fundraising event, and she was kind of like trying to promote it, and she had an aha moment where she realized, oh, you know, the Cabrillo Event Center is not like a super sexy, exciting name that you can apply to this, get people jazzed up and about an event there. It'd be nice if it had a nickname like the Shark Tank or something. And I said, exactly. That's what we're doing here on Coastal Windage. That's what we're trying to do. Okay, again, two free all-day passes at Santa Cruz Beach Boardwalk. First caller, 560-9851. Let's get to the air quality report. Everybody else gives you traffic and weather. Yawn. Exactly. Yawn. Can't do anything without air, so here's the air quality report. We give you the important stuff, air quality. It's 46 today in Half Moon Bay in Moss Beach. It was 53 last week. It's 38 in Redwood City. It's always better, almost always better in Redwood City, the air quality. 0 to 50 is good, so we're both in the good range today. 51 to 100 is moderate, and we theorize that Redwood City has better air quality, possibly because of the agriculture out here and also the fog. The fog suspends the particulates, and so it makes the air quality a little worse. However, we have no fog this morning, and thus, we have a 46 air quality. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, let's get in some emails here.
Yeah, I have a few.
Libby, the interns brought you a couple of emails there.
Yep.
Like. Okay.
Yep, I have hit one it. From Silver Bullet.
Okay.
And Silver goes, and so, let's see, he says, go ahead and build the new RV park, I'll say park, in the harbor. At least then all the homeless folks living in their RVs will have an actual place to call home with security, laundry facilities, and a community. This sounds like a great idea instead of having RVs lining every public street on the Mid-Coast. Well, Silver Bullets, I think that part of Ruben's report last week is that these are for RVs that were manufactured in 2012, and after, and also, didn't you also give even a price range? These are your luxury RVs. Unfortunately, this is not going to be a spot for the homeless folks to dump their RVs.
Right. I mean, it's kind of an intriguing idea, Silver Bullet. The Supervisor Horsley made a comment at the MCC meeting a couple weeks ago that they did a homeless survey, and a large percentage of homeless people are now choosing to live in motorhomes if they can afford to buy a you know, low cost motorhome. They choose that because then they're not paying monthly rent. They pay the one time cost to buy the motorhome, and now they're saving on the rent. And this is really an epidemic in homelessness. You drive up and down the peninsula, Mountain View, Shoreline Boulevard. You drive Shoreline from 280 to 101, and you get into the Shoreline section that's in Mountain View, It is lined, and this is a pretty affluent neighborhood. It is lined with these RVs. But as Libby said, this proposed RV park is a moneymaker. It's not for it's not for disadvantaged folks. These are for huge. No price range was given on that. But the types of RVs we're talking about are these ones that look like rock and roll band touring buses, right?
They're
huge. Mm-hmm. There's like two people in their 70s in this thing that is, you know, bigger than my house driving around. And there is a provision in the plans that says no RVs older than 12 years will be allowed. So no humans under 12 years old, probably, and no RVs over 12 years old.
Does it have an estimate of what the rent will be per spot?
No.
I think it's about $45 for the other one they've got.
Really?
Per night.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a
huge deal.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
That's why the people do it. The cost, the maintenance is very low.
Right.
It's like a parking lot.
Yeah, exactly. So this is to make money. It's not to provide any kind of services or community for disadvantaged folks. So, anyways, anything else over there?
I do have one more. Do you want us to go with that?
Sure. If it's good, if it's nice to me.
Well, this is a good one, actually. This is a nice little warm fuzzy one.
All right, I love
leg
that.
Leg warmers
then.
Are cool. That's who wrote it.
Leg warmers. I remember those
in the 80s. This mom goes on to say, I heard you mention the Cunha dance on last week's show.
Oh, yeah.
My daughter went to the dance on Friday. She was nervous and said she didn't dance with anybody, but clearly she had a good time. There was so much positive kid energy in that gym when I arrived to pick her up. I can't speak to the kids' experience, but from my perspective, the Cunha dance was a magical moment of childhood. Thanks to the school administrators, staff, and chaperones for hosting this event, and good on the kids for being so enthusiastic.
Excellent. I worked at that.
Oh, you did?
Oh, I did. I can give you an eyewitness account.
Yeah, give us a rundown.
Yeah, do it.
You would feel so proud about the future.
Aww.
For how united
we
these
need
kids
to
can,
these days.
There was points. I mean, I stayed way over in the corner. I was like, you know, if something went wrong, I go get the principal. And nothing went wrong. I did other little jobs here and there. But when certain songs would come on, they would band together.
Yeah.
And one time, it was like a school of fish. They circled around the middle. And some of the, newer parents kind of started walking forward, like, what's going on? Because it looked like a fight.
Uh-huh.
And so one of the teachers said, there's somebody dancing in the middle of that group. You know, they were all cheering them on.
Yeah.
And it was just big community experience.
Nice.
And then several times through the night, they would all scream and just kind of get all into a song. So the way they react to music together was very heartwarming.
And did you find that they did group in a central location? I guess my concern was that there were all these different stations.
Clicks, but stations
that could...
Like a game room.
That kind of thing.
You want that because if they dance for 2 or 3 hours straight, they're going to drop because, they just get so hot.
Yeah.
What would happen is you would see them kind of like if a good song came, they would run in and they would
and
dance.
Then run out.
And then they'd go kind of back out, go get water, go to the bathroom, go wherever they were. But most of the time, they're in that room.
Got it.
The light show was fantastic. The sound was great.
Really?
Oh, that's why I wanted to work in that room.
Nice.
Yeah, I like the music.
Nice. And so the DJ was good?
Yes, he was really good.
Oh, that's really great.
I just kind of, like I said, I stood back over in the corner, and I hadn't told my child that I was going to be working there. How uncool is that? My parents was going to be there.
Yeah.
Yeah, but how uncool is you look up and there's your dad.
Here's what's so funny is I stayed so far out of the way and I wore this long billed hat and wore dark and I told some of the moms, I said, she doesn't know. She goes, she's not going to care. And pretty soon later on, I saw her look at me and point and give me a big smile.
Aww,
and one of her friends came up. She goes, hey, you know, they just started chatting me up. So
you are the cool dad.
So you stood off in a corner against the wall with a dark billed hat and didn't talk to anybody. So it was just like your own middle school dance.
I mean, it was kind of like the eighth graders were kind of towards the front. Seventh graders were here. Sixth graders were kind of off like that. And then occasionally they would all blend together. But somebody kind of laid it out. I said, here's where they are. And, I worked in the food room for a while. And all I had to do was make sure they didn't take it out on the dance floor. Like, eat the cupcake. It's amazing how fast they can eat a cupcake. when they
yeah.
have
inhale. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, and I would just here's the trash. If you but oh man, the food. Somebody made a bunch of fried chicken. These kids were
oh,
happy.
They
were
yum. Very happy.
Fried chicken.
Yeah.
Well,
yum.
When you think back to special moments from your childhood, or at least on TV shows, and in my mind too. sweet, innocent middle school dances are always part of that kind of mental slideshow, you know, like they're just this period in childhood, you know, 9 to 12 is kind of the sweet spot, and these things that are happening during this time, middle school, outdoor education, these first dances where
yeah.
where puberty hasn't fully taken over, and there's some, you know, the awkwardness about the, you know, the opposite gender, but it's still at kind of an innocent level, and It just
gives me acid reflux to think of any of it. I have to tell you.
Bad memories.
I am so glad.
What?
I was
going the opposite direction there. All right.
Did you get asked to dance?
Oh, my God. I tell you, when you look like Big Bird in sixth grade, man, no.
Were you taller than everybody else?
Of course yeah. I was. And no. So it was not fun.
All right. Well,
speaking
of acid reflux, let's get into our news and notes here. All right. our long-running serial, the Moss Beach Crosswalk. Here, just some updates here. At the last MCC meeting, supervisor, just some new nuggets to drop in. Nothing really new right now, but Supervisor Horsley mentioned that Caltrans did not get a coastal development permit for the project.
Shocking.
Public Information Officer Jeff Weiss said that the rushed installation had nothing to do with the report of injury of pedestrians in that exact spot
not.
2 days earlier.
No.
Caltrans has been out at least 4 times since the initial installation. And once again, why do we keep harping on this? One need only look at the planned crosswalks on Highway 1 at Graywell Cove and the Montero Lighthouse for the stark contrast in how this was installed, planned, and engineered. Being none of those things except
the installation.
I was going
to say, are there air quotes around the
yes,
planned?
Yes.
And, okay.
Versus
yeah.
the amount of time, money, effort, and public input involved in the Graywell Cove and Montero Lighthouse crosswalks. Okay. Livy, you're happy about this. You were mentioning it earlier.
What?
I guess they're finally going to do something about the eroding
yes.
Roadway at Devil's Slide.
Yes.
So since this spring, Midcoast residents have been posting on Nextdoor and with pictures about an eroding section of Highway 1 on Devil's Slide,
mm-hmm.
which Caltrans for months now has made safe by putting a couple of orange cones.
Yeah,
next
and a
to
sandbag.
It, so.
I think I saw a sandbag,
yeah. oh, a sandbag
there,
sandbag.
Which will
okay.
protect us.
Excellent. Okay,
yeah.
so,
yeah.
I mean, to me, problem solved, but I guess... That's not good enough, so Caltrans is actually going to fix it. They're going to start installing a retaining wall to mitigate the erosion that's happening underneath the roadway. There's no details on when the work will begin, but our friend Jeff Weiss at Caltrans said that they hope the project will be finished in January. So we
so
don't.
When is all the other work going to start for the
Graywell.
Crosswalk?
Graywell
yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's right all in the same area.
Yeah, don't know. Hopefully not at the same time.
I mean, I'd love to... filter some of that $4 million that's going into that renovation to a solid retaining wall. I don't know what the budget is on this thing.
Nobody
but
does.
I hope it's not
nope.
a putty job.
Nobody's seen any
that.
Plans. Nobody has any budget on this retaining wall. They hope it will be finished in January. All work will occur at night with one-way traffic control. You know what, though? I bet we could get that road fixed a lot quicker if a crosswalk was included as part of the project.
Whoa.
Just to slap it down.
You are really
you know,
shooting
for
the moon.
Put some cinder block
here.
Underneath the road. We're good
wow.
to go. We could do it in a day, right?
Wow.
We've had
yeah.
a crosswalk put in a day before. We can do it.
I don't know.
All right. All
I think
right.
that's going to be... I can't even imagine how they're going to do that retaining wall. Belay on.
Well,
have to, like,
not to get off track here, but one of the reasons Caltrans said they couldn't do a below-grade underpass at Graywell Cove was because the cliffs there were just too geologically unstable,
mm-hmm,
and it
mm-hmm.
just can't be done. And yet...
Let's fix...
And yet, as part of the plans for the Graywell Cove Crosswalk, there will be a retaining wall. They're adding 13,500 square feet of asphalt to extend the shoulder to build a retaining wall on the ocean side of the highway. And now they'll be building a retaining wall on the ocean side of the highway to repair this.
13,000 square feet.
13,500 square feet of impermeable asphalt.
I mean, that's a couple, three houses. They're going to build that on the west side of the road out for that.
Mm-hmm. I don't even know where
they're not going to get that for $4 million. There's no way.
I don't. You know what that reminds me of? You know when you're building a sand castle and you put the water on top?
Yeah,
and it's like becomes semi-hard on top of it.
Yep.
And then you just poke your finger in it and all that soft, dry sand just and it collapses.
Mm-hmm.
And to put asphalt or retaining wall or whatever over very unstable.
Well, my guess is they're going to have some bulldozers out there. They're going to be compacting soil. All this on this super delicate, you know, cliffside that couldn't sustain a below grade underpass. But we're going to have bulldozers out there, extend the shoulder, 13,500 square feet of impermeable asphalt, and a retaining wall. Somehow it can handle that.
Their sponsor, Band-Aid, is very happy.
Shopcrete. Yeah. Brought to you by Shopcrete, retaining wall. Okay. Here's an interesting note. A global climate emergency. Dun, dun, dun. We need like a... global climate emergency declared by the Board of Supervisors 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, was that in the 20s that this should have probably
Yeah, we should have started this 100 years ago, and now it's too late, but here we go. So the Board of Supervisors of San Mateo County passed a resolution declaring a global climate emergency that requires the county's Office of Sustainability to bring annual reports. That's going to slow down global climate emergency. Annual reports.
Oh, yeah.
That's the answer to the Board of Supervisors to show how it is progressing towards meeting goals set by California Senate Bill 32, which requires state to reduce greenhouse gas emissions 40% below 1990 levels within 10 years. So, okay, great, fine. They're following the state Senate bill, but a global climate emergency declared... I mean, you know what my response to that is?
A little too late?
Meh. I mean, okay, so you've declared a global climate emergency and you're getting going to get annual reports on this, and the county is doing a few things to reduce their... What am I supposed to do? What does this global climate emergency mean to me? What do you want, county? What can I do as an individual person? This is where, for me, global climate change and sea level rise, my response is meh. I don't have any confidence in our fractured society and world today to band together to solve this massive, huge macro problem. I don't think we can all get on the same page and solve it. And one of the reasons we can't is because the people in charge have no specific directives they can give to individual people to make them feel like I'm doing something for this.
So this is them checking off a box to say, yes, we have something in place, and yes, we have annual reports.
Mm-hmm. So, and we'll need to increase our budget by this much.
Yeah. Well, seriously, this is a box checked.
Yeah, I mean...
That's what it is.
So, emergency declared, I guess problem solved.
Okay, buckle down. Right?
Sign Chicken Little.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, we're going to have to break, friends.
Are we?
Yes, we are.
Man, it just goes so fast.
It does.
All right, well, I guess for our valued advertisers, we will... set aside a little bit of time for them right now. While they're doing that, listeners, go over and grab that rotary dial phone. Spin the numbers, 560-9851. You want these Santa Cruz tickets. You want your 15 seconds. I don't think we can afford 15 minutes. You want your 15 seconds of fame on Coastal Windage.
Call in.
Give us a call. We'll be right back after these messages.
Lucia.
My dear, I'm so sorry. Let me kiss away the tears.
No, you mustn't kiss me. You made me promise not to let you kiss me. Lucia, I don't understand you.
I love you. Come to me, my darling. I want you.
Lucy. Harker! Harker, save yourself!
Dracula. Now playing at the Coastal Repertory Theater. It's the classic tale about a Transylvanian count who is really a vampire out to seduce women for their blood. Buy your tickets before October 13th and save 15% with the code T. Teeth 1 by going to CoastalRep.com. Performances at 7 p.m. on Friday and Saturday, Sunday matinees at 2 p.m. Dracula, now playing at the Coastal Repertory Theater.
Hi there, this is Audrey at Small Town Suites. It's been 1 year since opening the candy store on Main Street, and I'd like to thank everyone for the support and making my job so much fun. I've added to the collection of nostalgic candies, chocolates, licorice, and taffy, and I now have imported chocolate and marzipan. And don't forget about Fresh Fudge Friday. I make my fudge using only the finest ingredients. Follow me on Facebook and Instagram to see what's new. Small Town Sweets is located at 516 Main Street next to the historic Aspen Bay Bakery. Just ask some of my friends what they think.
We love Small Town Sweets!
Hi, this is Bob with BK Motors, and I have a problem. I need inventory. We've been so busy selling cars, I've almost run out of cars to sell. If you're looking to sell your car and you're scared of having unwanted people come to your home, look no further. We can help you sell your car. We specialize in selling cars on consignment at BK Motors. We go out on all test drives. We take care of all the DMV paperwork for you, and we also arrange for financing for all the new buyers. Give us a call at BK Motors at 726-8220 or go online to bkmotors.com to see all of our inventory. We're open Monday through Friday, 8 to 5 p.m. and on Saturdays from 7 a.m. till 12 noon. Again, our number is 726-8220. Come on down. We look forward to seeing you.
This is Corinne Bucher for the Cabrillo Education Foundation. Looking to have some fun? Got just the thing. This Sunday, October 6th, 11 to 4, it's the first annual Coastside Cornhole Tournament at Shoreline Station. The entry fee is $80 per two-player team, with all proceeds supporting the work of CEF. There will be a first-place prize of $500 and $250 for second place. You don't have to be in the Cornhole Tournament to enjoy this community event. Just come, hang out, and meet Chris Mullen, Warriors Hall of Famer. There will be food vendors, local craft beer, great family-friendly fun. The first annual Coastside Cornhole Tournament this Sunday, October 6th, 11 to 4 at Shoreline Station. Check it out at ceffund.org. That's ceffund.org. See you there.
Okay, and we're back. Coastal Windage, the talk of the coast. Ruben Truthmaker here with Libby Streetwise and Mr. Mojo Filters. We're going through news and notes, little things, tidbits of things around the coast side. And as always, we're running out of time. Let me just get to a couple more here.
What else do we have going on?
There was, to me, personally, a disappointing editorial from my friend Clay Lambert. Clay is the editor of the Half Moon Bay Review. Good guy. Community asset for sure. I've known him for many years. I respect and think he's a great guy.
I hear a but.
Yeah, well, I was thinking the same thing. But,
3, 2, 1.
But. Part of that respect is that we don't agree on everything, and I don't agree with the editorial that he put in the paper this week advocating for the building of affordable housing in the Beechwood property. Now, the Beechwood property has a bit of a taint to it. This is the 24 acres of open space below the high school at the corner of Highway 1 and Main Street. Right? Okay, like by the kind of by the hardware store.
Yeah, isn't there some endangered species there? That's why they didn't build something last year.
Right, so this is a notorious, infamous piece of property. In 1990, an 87-unit housing development was approved, but wetlands were discovered on the property, and the project was halted. Lawsuits ensued. The city was hit with a $37 million judgment, which they've recently paid off, and they now own the property. And so Clay is saying, well, why couldn't, you know, if 87 units were approved, why can't 50 units be developed there to help alleviate the housing situation. Here's one reason I can think of. Can anybody literally think of a worse place to add 50 more homes and probably up to 200, 300 more vehicles than that exact place?
No kidding.
The worst, that's the worst traffic spot on the coast at commute times because the two lanes come down to one. The stoplights are there. They're going to be building more houses at the end of Terrace and putting a stoplight in there.
Yeah.
Really, 50 more houses right there? Like that? I don't see any problem with that.
I'd also be interested to know what exactly, air quote, affordable housing is these days.
Okay.
There's no such thing.
I mean, exactly. We don't need any more housing.
Okay. This is another reason why I just am kind of frustrated with this. Okay, theoretically, sure, it's a good idea. But in practicality, that location is horrible. Also, just like the proposed Cypress Ridge development in Moss Beach, which says it's going to alleviate this housing shortage and they'll be make allocations for coastside residents. MidPen Housing Authority and the county have been pressed on this, and they admit and acknowledge there's no way they can guarantee that these units would go to coastside residents who need housing.
Right.
They literally cannot. There's no way they can guarantee that. And so to say we're going to build these to alleviate the local housing shortage.
It's baloney.
It is.
It's baloney.
Clay writes, it sure would help dozens of people who every day face down the prospect of leaving the coastside because they simply can't afford a place to live. And I would say to Clay, how? What is the mechanism that will ensure that coastsiders who are being forced to leave the coast because they don't have a place to live will get to live here? It can't be insured. Build 50 houses and you'll have 50 people from over the hill vying to buy them and move here.
I'm going to get on my community center soapbox right now.
You do.
And how about that? How about using the 24 acres for a community center for the coastside? How about that? It's right down from the high school. All the high schoolers could go there. I mean, as we know, it was a great addition to the town to have the Boys and Girls Club, but that actually isn't all that large. It's taken up 24/7. You can't just have an ad hoc base or basketball game there because it's reserved all the time. There's no pool. And to have one skate park, pump, what is it? The bike pump track.
Yep. Oh, I have some inside news for you on that.
But I mean, honestly, that it's a perfect location for that sort of thing. And yes, okay, I see you rolling your eyes at me, and it is not a moneymaker.
Wow.
I hear you, but talk about something that would serve our community above and beyond. And I know it would be 20 years out, but at least I would feel that the hearts and minds of the powers that be were on track with bettering our community and the youth of our community. And to start focusing on those kind of things rather than teaching all of the youth that at the end of the day, it's about the buck.
Okay, so community, that was a good point. I would like to also point out the reason that was never used, it was considered like a wetlands. There was no way you could build on that.
There's some controversy about after this project was approved and everything had been done, suddenly wetlands were discovered. And there's some, you know how the Beach House Hotel, like, was built and then it burned down, like 2 days before it was going to be finally built, the one across from Surfer's Beach.
Whoa. Hot coffee, Henri.
Coffee down. We've got coffee down. I was so excited about that. Coffee down. Anyways, that suddenly burnt down. Suddenly, these wetlands were discovered after this project was approved, and so that has a lot of people
extenuating circumstances.
Feeling that there's some kind of conspiracy there. So it is a notorious property. Here's the thing that I think is being overlooked. When you drive into town, it's kind of nice to have open fields, especially when that field is full of those mustard yellow flowers.
Yeah.
It's kind of nice to have open spaces that remind people, this used to be a semi-rural, you know, kind of agricultural community. Do we have to build up do we have to make this the Veterans Boulevard corridor in Redwood City?
No.
I don't feel that we do.
And I also think in my idea for a community center, it also doesn't have to be necessarily a a building. Like, you'd have the pool, you could have outdoor basketball courts, yeah. You could have the skate ramp and the pump track. And all of that is, and yes, probably like a little low-lying infrastructure, like a building, but it doesn't have to be a monstrosity. And, you know, it's such a shame. It's a real shame.
All right. Well, that's a good transition. Thank you. We'll skip a couple more of our news and notes to get to our main topic here. Speaking of a shame.
Yeah.
The cratering of the Cabrillo Unified School District.
Yeah.
Deep sigh as a parent. So buried deep within last week's Half Moon Bay Review was this chilling headline. Cabrillo schools prepare for budget cuts. So just a pause here. This kind of seems like a page one story to me.
Yeah.
Back in the old days, back in the dark days of the aughts, the Bush, George W. Bush days, I was doing a political blog, and I named my blog page A26, because in the old days, when there were newspapers, that's where all the aha stories were located. So world events, this is happening in Crimea or whatever, would be on page 1, 2, yep. 3 of the main section. Back in page 26 would be these little tiny stories about, you know, XYZ Pipeline Corporation building new pipeline across Crimea.
Right.
And then you're like, oh.
Yeah,
and
skating now, below the radar.
And now we've got this big, you know, battle going on in Crimea on the front page, and here on page A26 is a story about some pipeline company wants to build through Crimea.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's where they kind of buried the, like, aha stories that made everything make sense. And here we have budget cuts for Cabrillo schools deep, deep within the paper. Okay. We on this show have well documented the economic struggles of San Mateo County, the richest county in the world, the country. Year on year, property tax revenue increasing 7 years in a row, taxable sales increase, 2.4% unemployment, $105,000 median income, and yet they're having to slash their budget $100 million over the next 2 years because they just can't make ends meet. Now it seems that Cabrillo Unified School District is also unable to make ends meet, even with over $200 million in bonds currently ascribed to, a parcel tax renewal Measure I on the ballot, and support from the Cabrillo Education Foundation. CUSD claims it will have a $9.8 million budget gap by 2022.
Oh, my God.
$9.8 million. They have an annual budget of $36 million. Depending on whether Measure I, the parcel tax, passes this November, it's on the ballot this November in an off year, which they usually put these kinds of things on an off year ballot because only the hardcore supporters show up so they can have a better chance of getting something like this passed. I'm not saying that I'm against it. I'm just saying that's why it's on this year's ballot.
Mm-hmm.
if it passes, depending on whether it passes, the district is looking to cut between $2.6 million and $4.2 million from next year's budget. Let's just pause for a second. $36 million annual budget. Can you imagine the carnage that cutting $4.2 million from CUSD's budget is going to do to our district schools?
Yeah, I can. And it's absolutely monstrous.
Talk about heartburn. This is from the superintendent, Sean McFetridge, new to the school district. And you have to wonder how somebody conned him into taking this job when this, you know, got dropped in his lap. Per Superintendent McFetridge, Sean, quote, everybody has got to come to understand that our expenses exceed our revenues and it has caught up with the district. We must make these cuts by December or risk losing control of the district. Wait, what? So McFetridge says he expects to see pink slips going out in March.
Oh, my God.
There's speculation that there'll be consolidation, school consolidation. Kings Mountain School may be closed. And then they talked about losing control of the district. That's where I was like, oh, wait.
This is terrifying.
Excuse me? Say that again? Here's what would happen. If the district were to require emergency funding, they're going to be $9 million short in 2022. If they require a loan from the state or something, then the county superintendent of schools would assume the powers and responsibilities of the governing board and appoint an administrator to run the district. the administrator would not have to consult with the school board or the district and superintendent, could make unilateral decisions. And the administrator's main priorities would not be student education, it would be paying off the loan. After several criteria are met, including recovery plans, collective bargaining agreements, etc., the county and superintendent could replace the administrator with a trustee who would then supervise the board. And then after at least 3 years, and if the district maintains financial compliance, the trustee may be removed and operating governance given back to the board. We are on the precipice of this possibly happening.
Sounds like it.
I say that because a special fiscal advisor, Denise Porterfield, Deputy Superintendent of Business Services for the County of Education, has been assigned to the district as a special financial advisor. She says, the targeted funding for districts is not adequate to support the needs of students or support the increases of the cost of education. The cost of living, the cost of goods and services, and infrastructure costs are escalating faster than the cost of living allowance applied to the formula for funding from the state. So, as with the county, what we're saying, capitalism is a system with a life cycle that comes to an end, and I believe we're at the end of the capitalism life cycle, because when the richest county in the country cannot make ends meet, and school districts are going under because they can't have enough, they don't have enough money, something's wrong with the system.
I just not understand. So I'm a total layman when it comes to this. I'm not understanding. So you're saying, you know, we're the richest county in the country, and we have now two measures that passed. I don't even know what they equate to. 80 million? More than that?
These are the bond measures you're talking
yes,
about?
Yes, the yeah. bond measures. Measure M was the last
M
one.
M and S, and they and equal S. $200
million. $200
million. Coming with that, that's the principle, and with that will come about $200 million in interest.
Right. So my point is, does that money even exist? And
it does, but it's only for facilities. It can only be for facilities improvement, which supporters of those measures say, okay, well, what that allows us to do is use these funds for facilities, and that leaves more of the general fund available for salaries and other things.
Well, okay then. So where are the facility improvements that are happening?
They are happening. Building C is back online. Okay. The playground at Hatch was redone. They're doing something with the sports fields at the high school. They've put these covers on the parking lots at the schools with solar panels
on
them.
What about Farallon?
Farallon and El Granada are at the end of the list. They'll get to El Granada Elementary in 2025 if the building is still standing.
If it still exists.
Right.
Okay.
Well, the district is claiming that 82% of their funding goes towards employee salaries and benefits. Okay, 82%.
Yeah.
From the district's website, they have 300 employees, $36 million operating budget. So 82% of $36 million is $29.52 million. That's $98,400 per year per employee. I bet a lot of these CUSD employees would be pretty surprised to hear that they're making $98,400 a year.
Yeah.
Now,
that's probably about $15,000 in benefits per person, because you know how the health industry is, you know, the insurance companies rake everyone through the coals. So about 15 of that, probably, if not more, is benefits, which is disgusting and a whole nother conversation.
So what is the school district to do? We are looking at a $9 million budget deficit in a couple of years that would, how are we going to make that up? The only way to make that up is going to be a loan from the state, and that's going to put basically the district into receivership with the county and the state.
Yeah.
Can I just jump in before this gets so dark that I can't see anymore?
No, we're moving on.
Okay, go ahead.
It is a death hole. It is an absolute death hole.
Well, but I think that some of your stuff is too extreme. I don't see anywhere that we're the richest county in the United States. We're not even in the top 10.
Well, there are many different metrics you can look at.
I've looked at several while you've been jabbering away there, and we're not on any of the lists. And Santa Clara is way higher than San Mateo.
What are your metrics that you're looking at?
I'm looking online. What are you looking at?
The metric I used was taxable income per capita.
No.
Tax burden per family of four. tax burden per family of four. The tax burden per family of four for a family of four in San Mateo County is $16,000 a year. The next closest...
What does that mean, tax burden?
That means what a family of four expects to pay in taxes.
For sales tax?
Taxes.
Okay, most of them don't pay property tax, right?
Well,
they don't. Most only 12% on their home.
I don't know what the percentage.
Okay, well,
is.
I'm just trying to point out. I don't think it's near as bad as you're making it out to be.
I think it is. I think it absolutely is.
Okay.
And that's why I asked the metrics there, because there's all kinds of different metrics. To me, what the tax burden is for the individual residents. The next closest county tax burden for family of four is like Nassau County or some Westchester County, $12,000 a year. The tax burden for San Mateo County family of four, $16,000. $4,000 a year difference per family of four to the next closest county.
I didn't see anything under tax burden with us being number one.
Well,
it's mostly on the East Coast with these small rich towns like in Maryland and Virginia. They're like number one, two, three, four. And then Santa Clara comes in.
Again, it's all statistics. You can cherry pick what your metrics are. The metric I chose to use was tax burden per family of four.
We're not the richest county.
Oh, we are. We definitely are.
And I am Switzerland.
100 years ago, when I was trying to figure out what to do with my life, 100 years ago or 10 minutes ago, my dad kept imploring me to become a teacher. Among the other reasons he cited was the fact that, quote, they never lay off teachers. I can remember him saying that to me many, many times. You should be a teacher. They never lay off teachers. This was like in the early 90s, the George Bush senior recession of the early 90s, and, you know, couldn't find a job. And he was saying, well, they never lay off teachers. What a quaint anachronism that is today, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, we still have these tickets, 560-9851. If you want to jump in on the Mojo Rubin divide here, if you've got a different
Get online, look up your numbers, get your data.
But make sure you can cite your metric here, because
I'm selling T-shirts.
What's your T-shirt say?
Go Mojo.
Okay. All right. Oh, my God. Okay, let's rip through these emails right here. There's only two. Okay, good. This is Anna_W2973. Anna, you need to work on your branding a little bit there. This show is so cool. I love that our little town has its own talk radio show about things that happen here on the coast. So many interesting topics. When I hear Ruben and Livy and Mojo mention places or businesses or people I know, it makes me feel really connected to the coast side.
Nice.
Oh, thank you, Anna. I mean, that's the idea. Thank you for listening. Call in sometime. Yeah, say hello in person.
Yeah.
650-560-9851. But that's the idea. I mean, this is a little community, and we kind of know these restaurants or these businesses or these beaches that we're talking about. All right, Foggy Noggin. This one's from Foggy Noggin. That could have been me this morning. Forgive me, I am a public school graduate, okay? But I do not understand how and why employee salaries and benefits can account for so much of the district's expenses. It's not like they have 3,000 employees and everybody is driving a Tesla. How did schools do it back in the old days? How does any school meet its budget? I don't know.
We need a few more shows for that one.
I just feel like there's something. Whenever you hear a city government or some public institution, it's never a private corporation, some public institution can't meet its budget, what is the culprit that's always cited? Employee salaries and benefits. And yet these public employees, there's nobody making $3 million a year working for the school district. So how can it be that a district with 300 employees, 82% of its costs go to benefits and salaries? It's not the salaries, it's the benefits. And I feel like this is some kind of accounting trick or sleight of hand that sets it up so that benefits are calculated in such a way that they are a top-heavy part of the budget. If somebody wants to call in with more information...
Oh.
And there it is. Okay, this is why we are a community show. Right there. Ruben Truthmaker here with Livy Streetwise and Mr. Mojo Filters having a discussion about the Cabrillo Unified School District. Who are we talking with this morning? Hello? Oh, you know, you want these tickets.
Oh, no.
Come on.
Are you there?
You were going to school us on this benefit situation. Okay, well, we lost that caller.
Hey.
We got a couple minutes. They can call back in.
I want to give a shout-out to Anna's email.
Anna, W2973.
Yes. And it's going to be a half shout-out because I don't know the name of the place. But I just wanted to let you know that Coastal Buzz also posted this.
Oh, Coastside Buzz. Uh-huh.
Coastside Buzz, sorry.
Yep.
That the gelato place that is right where the old FX used to be. Do you know what street that is? It's going south on Main Street. You hang a left at, like, the terracotta-colored building where the bagel shop used to be and the FX jewelry. Anyhow, there is this wonderful little gelato shop, and this guy, this French guy, runs it, and he just spent a lot of time over in France, and he's back. So it's now open, and I can't tell you how fantastic this gelato is. It is fresh. He makes it out of all of the fruits and the vegetables and whatever the flavor, it is like you are actually eating that item, like a pineapple or an apple. I had apple gelato for the first time. It was like I was eating a Granny Smith apple.
Wait, where is this?
It is right at that, when you're going south on Main Street.
Mm-hmm.
It's at, like, the terracotta building on your left.
Yeah, where FX was.
Yes, but it's around the corner.
Okay, okay. All right.
Not on Main Street. It's around the corner. It is the best gelato I've ever had.
Okay, all right.
So, just a little shout out. I wish I knew the name, but it's fresh gelato.
All right, I'm on my way.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, all right.
I think it opens at 2.
2?
Something like that. Or maybe 12. I don't think they're open first thing.
I know, really, right?
He's actually working out of, like, I don't want to say one of the closets from one of the shops on Main, but he has, like, I don't know, it's like a 5x5 space. So he's just back there making gelato all day long.
Okay. All
right. Wonderful.
The gelato man.
Yeah.
All right. Why public shaming?
Oh,
okay.
Wow.
So there was a Nextdoor post about some 10-year-olds in the Rite Aid in Pacifica who were exhibiting extremely poor behavior, causing a general disturbance, yelling out the N-word, like standing at the door of the store, yelling out the N-word.
Now, where's this from?
This is on Nextdoor about this occurred in the Rite Aid in Pacifica.
Okay.
So these 10-year-olds behaving very poorly. There's another story on Apple News about a woman who had applied for a job, and the job told her to, like, link her Instagram account to their Instagram account because then she could follow the job search more closely or whatever. Well, once she linked, they went onto her site and grabbed a picture of her in a bikini and put it on their site and then, like, made fun of her, saying, like, you know, we're trying to hire programmers or whatever, not bikini models, and, like, had, like, little diagrams pointing to her and stuff. So public shaming.
That's terrible.
So doesn't seem like there's much. There's shaming that goes on, but in the trolling manner. There's not public shaming in the sense of applying kind of societal values in a way of tamping down people's worst instincts. Like this behavior of these 10-year-olds. Like the behavior, say, of our president. You know, this kind of thing, like the behavior of these children in the store. One thing that I noticed on the Nextdoor post is there were several people saying, yeah, it's there, I saw it, it's terrible. There was no adult, whether they're the parents of these kids, a store employee, no adult said, hey, guys or gals, kids, that what you're doing is not right. You shouldn't be saying that. You know, that's a bad word, like, go away, stop saying that. There was no check put on them at all. And so the question I'm asking is there a value to public shaming? Does it still exist? Is our society less respectful without the traditional type of public shaming? And I this so when I say the traditional type,
what
to me,
those, like,
it would
op-eds or?
Well, it would be like someone in the store in Pacifica shouting to these children, hey, that's not an appropriate word to use. Your behavior is really unacceptable. Stop doing that. Sure, the kids are going to yell obscenities back, but you at least have to say something to put a mark down that this. Tell these kids this is not acceptable. So that, to me, is an example of traditional positive public shaming.
Yeah.
whereas the Instagram example is a is an example of current internet trolling,
passive aggressive,
not public shaming.
Yeah,
that's just like that's just clickbait trolling, and it's not doing any kind of value. It's not helping anybody there.
I'd agree.
So is our society, has public shaming in the positive way, the traditional way, gone away? And is our society less respectful without it? Are there other ways to influence behavior in a positive way? Where are we?
I think the first thing you want to do is set a good example. Just from working at the dance, I had to yell at kids not to run. Okay, and I had to yell because there's a disco going on.
Sure.
And it feels odd to yell at a kid, but they can't really hear you because it's so loud. But you do know that if they keep doing that, they're going to endanger other kids running around, falling down, stuff like that. So you have to tell them to not run.
Now, when you call out to a kid, you know, hey, Brian, stop running.
No.
Is that public shame?
There's no names. I don't even know who they are. All I see is a figure running. Yeah. And they told me, and I saw other people coming if I couldn't get to them. Just stop running, and they would stop immediately. I mean, it's the parents.
It is.
It's the parents.
You read my mind.
I don't know what else to say.
Yeah.
It's the parents.
I agree. I mean,
or lack.
It's a larger conversation. And we're kind of out of time. I hate to be a buzzkill, but you're right. I mean, I do think it absolutely starts at home, and unless there's some sort of consistent moral mentor in the child's life, or adult for that matter, because there are plenty of crazy adults out there that don't really have too much of a moral compass. But unless it's a consistent thing, these one-offs aren't going to do anything.
All right. I know we got to go. Listeners, please put this in your brain pans and call in next week so we can maybe continue this guy. I think it's important. I'm not wanting to get into a political discussion, but I would just say that I think it's harder right now to talk to our kids about morals and ethics and values when we have such lawlessness happening at the top levels of our government right now. Blatant lawlessness that if I was a kid, I would say, well, what does any law matter? Don't the ends justify the means? Isn't that all that our society is about, is just whatever you come up with at the end? Isn't that what we're all trying to get to, is the end? Why do we bother? Maybe that should be the why for next week. Why laws? What does it matter?
Okay.
All right.
We could start it off with that.
That's interesting. We'll start with the why next.
Yeah.
You know what? Next week we have Jill Jacobson, executive director of the Boys and Girls Club. So maybe we will start with the why and just let her run out the end of the show. We'll see. Tune in next week. You don't want to miss that live Shooting the Breeze live interview with Jill Jacobson, Libby Streetwise, Mojo Filters, and myself, Ruben Truthmaker, next week at 9 a.m. Coastal Windage.
Have a great weekend.